This is episode 140 of Drunk on Comics, brought to you by InkWhiskey.com and Motor City Comic Con.
So I'm really only back because I'm a zombie right now. I literally died last weekend down in New Orleans, but my dad took me to a shop and some shaman.
Do you say New Orleans or do you say New Orleans?
I say New Orleans, but...
Yeah, you're one of those weirdos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what's the state that's just below Washington over on the Pacific Northwest? What? Starts with an O.
Yeah, Ohio?
No. how do you say that state?
Omaha.
Come on. That's a city.
Ontario?
Fuck off. Will you just say
I'm trying to... I know, because I don't want to say it wrong.
No, I'm curious to hear how you say it.
Oklahoma?
No! We could do it already?
No.
All right. Well, this is Drunk on Comics. I'm Derek. Tony's the fucking idiot over there.
I'm the reanimated idiot.
Yeah.
I need to tell my stories.
All right.
Of how fucking amazing New Orleans is.
Nolans.
NOLA.
Oh, yeah.
At least. Yeah. But.
Oh, okay. I'll actually admit my idiocy here. I never understood why it was like. The NOLA. I was like, what? And then all of a sudden I went, oh, LA is the abbreviation for Louisiana. I'm like, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like it was that long of a period of time, but I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I felt dumb.
I mean, it took me a quick sec when I was like, no, but I got it because I was down there. The beer flows like water from the taps, and you can literally probably have one hooked up to your main because. The beer is cheap down there. It's awesome. My liver did die. Sadly, I took a week off of drinking. Actually, I think that was a good thing for me, to tell you the truth. But, whoa, so much fun. And then if you saw, like, on our Facebook, we found the Ecto-1 as well. That was a random cool geeky find.
Yeah.
So there's so much that I could talk about, but we're not party on comics drunk. We're... Drunk on, well, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, actually, let's, quick little shout out here first before we get things going for off the shelf, because it is brought to you this week once again by Motor City Comic Con. It has been officially announced that we will be there again. Not that you guys were ever, you know,
in doubt.
Right. But it's official. We're on the website, we're on the Facebooks. So, yeah, you guys can definitely come and check us out. At Motor City. It's going to be a blast. It is this May, and it is, unfortunately, I don't remember the dates. Is it 15th through 18th? I'm pulling it up right now, but my tablet's being slow.
Something 18th sounds familiar, but...
Yeah, 15th, 16th, and 17th, sorry. Oh. 15th, 16th, and 17th.
18th isn't even...
I added an extra day, Monday. Yeah. No, 15th, 16th, and 17th, this May in gorgeous Novi, Michigan. At the Suburban Collection Showplace, go check them out at MotorCityComicCon.com. Their guest list is becoming ridiculous.
Yeah, didn't think they could top last year.
Yeah, and okay, here's the thing: I'm not a media guy. Like, I don't get excited about the media guests. Fucking A, man! I'm going to spend so much money in Media Row this year. Like, it's stupid. I mean, outrageous. Stay away from me if you're contagious, because I'm the man. No, not a loser. What? I wonder how many people caught that. That was just it takes two. I've had way too much to drink today. All right. Anyway, please go check out MotorCityComicCon.com and go from there. Tony, you want me to kick it off for off the shelf, or do you want to?
No, I can take that honor. Okay. So I don't know how to like transition to like a cool like so like the mysteriousness of this book and. Coming from the depths of mutant kind comes Magneto number 15.
Boom.
Yeah, that makes it perfect. Written by Colin Bunn. Gabriel Hernandez Walta's artist, Jordi Belair on colors. Now, I also had to pick up the previous issue before this as well, because I don't know, it's been a little bit since I actually was caught up on my Magneto-ness. I do know in the Uncanny Avengers, they kept talking about how, you know, him not being the father of
Scarlet Witch and
And they were really thinking about that in their in those two people's minds. Magneto seems to kind of just kind of doesn't really care. Well, actually, because he just kind of always knew that he wasn't their parents. I still want to know about that mystery. This doesn't talk anything about that. I just this, however, takes place after the Axis onslaught thing that happened in Genosha. Now that there are some more mutants there because they were being rounded up by the Red Skull, Magneto has some people to save. The one thing that I've loved about the Magneto series is the flashbacks. We've gotten a lot of them to way back when concentration camps, you know, Nazi realm, and his whole arc of wanting to rectify that. And he's gone across the world pretty much killing old SS people. Well, within this book, and like I said, you kind of need to know what happened in 14 as well to set this one up. He was back on Genosha. These people were coming, and the flashback in that was the first destroying of Genosha when the Sentinels came in, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of cool parallels to what he was back then to what he is now, seeing the S.H.I.E.L.D. Helicarrier coming with his powers dampened, but he's got that elixir that has been able to help him, you know, augment his magnetism. He was pretty much, you know, kicking their ass and pretty much could have destroyed the S.H.I.E.L.D. people. However, he looked back on, you know, the past and what he did then, and he was thinking, what would Charles do? He goes, am I going to open a school here? Am I going to do something? I don't know, but maybe it's a little bit better if I surrender instead of attacking them. So the end of the last book, number 14, he surrenders. Bringing us up to date now, he's on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier. And, you know, everyone's kind of, you know, saying, you know, he's got the power dampeners. That's one of the things I wanted to bring up, power dampeners. How the fuck do those things work? Like, it works on every mutant, and you'd think every mutant's DNA is significantly, like, you know, whatever.
I don't know, because if you could have a power dampener, shouldn't you be able to have, like, a power creator or power, like, amplifier?
Yeah. Well, they kind of do with his elixir that he's been taking to amplify the power, but...
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, you should just be... I mean, if you could put power dampeners on somebody, you should be able to put power amplifiers on some half-ass guy and make him kick ass.
Yeah.
But okay, we got to back up a second here, because after the whole No More Phoenix thing and all that, the Phoenix Force 5, choo-choo-choo, you know, have they ever explained why their powers got fucked up?
They just said it was because of the Phoenix Force. They were so powerful then that when it got zapped out of them, it messed with their molecular structure. I don't know. There wasn't really a cool, nerdy scientificness to it.
So, what's up with Namor? What's up with him? Like, did his powers get affected?
See, I don't... Yeah, I don't know. Because there's...
Like, that's...
They pretty much have ignored it in most... I mean, except for Cyclops now, where he has the bigger blast beam, but that's more cooler in my aspect, instead of, like, weird. Magneto's the only one that's been following suit of his powers are messed up and weaker.
And White Queen?
See, I haven't... maybe, but I haven't been really reading X-Men anymore, so...
Oh, yeah, I mean, I pretty much dropped all my...
But I read from somewhere that... Cyclops, I think, is dead, or they said, like, the only people that were the Phoenix Force is Colossus, and I'm like, hello, Magneto, but, because Colossus had it at one point, too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, maybe they could all get amplifiers that look like hammers. Everybody gets a hammer.
Hammers around.
Yeah.
No, but, like, all right. Okay, quick go back to it, though, just, it's one of those things of, like, I've seen, you know, mutant suppressing gauntlets or neck things or whatever. That I'm just like, how the hell do those things work? Who the hell came up with that to just be able to, and why not be able to make one that you could just put around, like, the globe, like, spray it down across the, you know, and dampen in all the powers? I don't know. But
satellites.
Yes. Well, that kind of goes into what this one's all about. So he surrendered. He's captured. They're bringing him to S.H.I.E.L.D. They're saying they're going to bring him to a more permanent spot. This agent here is saying, you know, because you've murdered people in cold blood. And Magneto, though, is asking him, what about all the mutants that, you know, have been killed? You haven't did anything to those people that killed them. Kind of calling S.H.I.E.L.D. out for what they are, hypocrites. Well, you get this point where there's a rat. There's someone who explained to S.H.I.E.L.D. Where that Magneto was going to be in Genosha and all this. You then get the flashback of, and this is what the cool flashback was in this, and that's why I'm loving this series, is because of these interesting origin things that haven't really messed with continuity, but they're just small little tidbits of knowledge that you've never known before. And this one was talking about younger Charles with the younger Eric with when he first came up with Cerebro. And Eric was like, that's cool and all, but what if, you know, the government gets a hold of it? What if some other entity does and can track mutants then? And Charles is just saying, you know, well, it'd be safe here. It's undercover. And Eric kind of came into this room saying, but I knew about it before you told me, Charles. I had informants. You don't think someone else will have that? And that's what the plot of this story is. S.H.I.E.L.D. has a Cerebro.
Oh.
Magneto allowed himself to get captured. So this agent that crossed or whatever, well, really did that so that he could get captured. He gets out of there. He goes, destroys their Cerebro type thing, wipes out all of the mutants from their files, and then kind of gets out of there. Oh, that was like, did not fucking see any of that coming. Holy shit, great writing. Kept me in suspense. I'm just like, he's captured. I know he's going to get out somehow, but then you find out it was all set up to get captured. It wasn't really him being a pacifist in the last one anyways. Oh, such good writing. And
Cullen Bunn, I think, is one of the smartest writers. Like, he really knows how to kind of put those twists in. And I don't know, it's a little bit smarter writing than what you see in a lot of stuff, because a lot of, especially superhero comics, can be so easy to just tell a fun story and a good story, which it sounds like this is. But I love when they put something in there that's just a little bit more intelligent than what you expect, and you're like, fuck yeah, I like that.
So. Yeah, not only intelligent, but a little dark in this too. It's not your whimsical, fun-loving, let's joke around comic book, but it still has some of those moments, some of those kind of, that's kind of funny, like when Magneto's pretty much like, yeah, you got served, you know.
And realistically, I mean, it doesn't seem like, well, here's the question, though. You know, he wiped out all of the mutants from their files, but did he get it, like, did he go and he wipe out their cloud, too?
No, they get backup all over. I'm sure that whatever magical program Magneto hack that he had, it looked like he just put a thumb drive thing in there, which, why movie magic, that's couldn't how he just put his work.
Thumb there because he's Magneto and he just wipes everything with power magnets?
Man, if he was more punny, yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
My thumb drive.
Yeah.
Cool. So it was, yeah, it was a great story. And
how's the art looking on that? I mean, I've always liked Waltz's art, but I don't remember if he's been doing this book since the beginning.
To be honest, I don't remember if it's from the beginning or not either, but it's in the same realm that it has been. Darker, especially the flashbacks are pretty much primarily black and gray with some red tones. And there's some color in other spots, but it's really a more darker type colors.
Because I remember when I was talking about issue one back then, and this is one of those books where I will pick this up on trade and read it. But I mean, this was basically, to me, it was Marvel's version of like an Image comic book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was Marvel's indie book, if you will. And I'm looking forward to catching up on this one. So cool. All right. Actually, you might be a little surprised here, Tony. I also have a Marvel book this week.
That doesn't surprise me.
Considering the number of Marvel books that I've cut.
And I know, but I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't, you know.
Well, how about this? This is the only big two book I picked up this week.
Okay.
I mean, out of my entire stack, this was the only one that was a big two. And I got Silk, number one.
So, you know, that's surprising that you got Silk. Did not. I know you're not really reading Spider-Man right now, so why would you pick up a Spider book?
You know, I was just kind of curious about the character. You know, I've got the issue or issues where she first showed up, but, like, you didn't really know anything about her. And I'm like okay, I'm kind of curious about this character. excuse me.
Does this explain, then? Give a backstory?
Yeah, it fills you in a little bit on her.
Okay.
But there's definitely some stuff there where I'm going to ask you about as I kind of go through it. But Robbie Thompson is the writer. Stacey Lee does art. And Ian Herring does colors on this. And here's the first thing I'm going to say is when I opened this up, have you seen this book yet?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I opened this up. I fell in love with the artwork instantly.
Yeah, it looks pretty nice.
I mean, I was like, holy shit, this is fun and it's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, Stacey Lee, I'm not familiar with who she is. And I want to, one of the things that I'm really looking at here is there's a couple aspects. This book, her ability to bring emotion into the panels is, and I don't mean this to waste this word on a Marvel book like this, but it really is uncanny what she can do. Maybe I should just say it's amazing. But, I mean, she just has such beautiful line work that draws the action in here. And it's got a little bit of an anime thing in it. It's got a little bit of a Cartoon Network thing in it. It's
kind of astonishing.
It is. It really, you know, it really is astonishing. It's fantastic, if you will. Incredible, perhaps.
Superior to others?
Yes. Yeah. Are you looking up all the Marvel
acronyms? No, I was going to, but that one just popped in my head.
That's a good one. But, okay, so her artwork, I really want to look up other things that she's done because I'm just blown away. Like, I really, really love this. Next thing that, you know, Marvel and DC and other companies have been trying to get good, strong female lead characters out there. And, you know, I typically pick up the books, and a lot of times I'm very disappointed with the choice of the creative teams that they've put on some of these, because I don't feel like they're putting their you know, sometimes it feels like they're just putting the book out to satisfy and go, well, look, we got female lead, you know, solo characters, but the books don't sell. Well, yeah, it's because the creative team isn't maybe the best one. This book fucking blew me away. I was loving it. It's great to have a really strong female lead character. I'm not 100% certain, but I believe that that Cindy Moon here is Japanese. Based on the way she's drawn, based on some of the things you see in the family's home and all that. If I'm wrong, somebody please correct me on this. But it's cool. So you've got a minority character, a female character, who just is out there kicking ass. Then we get into the writing. And, Tony, I kind of started to tell you about this at the bar last night. The very beginning, you've got Silk fighting this guy, and she says, "What are you supposed to be?" And the guy says, "My name's Dragon Claw." She goes, "Seriously? Sounds like a Pokemon. Is Pokemon still a thing?" Asking for a friend. Because she's been locked in a bunker for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, though, because, like, you know, as you go through, like, she's got a job working at, you know, what is it, the Bugle?
Really?
Yeah.
Doing what?
She's a reporter, just like Parker.
Well, Parker technically right now isn't because he's got his own business. That he's
right. Well, like he was. This is and a lot of this is fun because she's going through some similar things of like what Peter went through. She's trying to learn her power. She's trying to learn about things. But Jameson, J. Jonah Jameson, calls her analog because everybody else is using tablets and she's just writing stuff with a little pad of paper and pencil.
That's funny.
He's like, I like these. That's old school. Wow. Yeah. So he just starts calling her analog.
And does Peter show up at all in this?
Yeah.
Do they talk about Spider-Verse at all?
No.
All right, because that kind of ended the battle, but it hasn't concluded yet, which is, I think it's next week that it's coming out. So it's interesting that Silk came out already before that whole huge thing ended.
The only note in here was, I think it's like the third page, where she, you know, has the inner monologue saying, my powers have been acting screwy lately, and there's a little asterisk, or in this case, it's a little spider. And, you know, the editor on this, I'm assuming this is, who is editor, Nick Lowe on this? Nick Lowe on this one. He put a little note in there saying, when she's talking about her powers acting screwy, he says, since the Spider-Verse event.
Okay, then that's, okay. That's cool to know because there is some shit that, holy shit, happened in there that was interesting as far as lore goes.
Yeah.
So it's cool that there's some repercussions from that. So.
Yeah. So, but no, Spider-Man's in here, you know, apparently, and here's maybe something you can fill me in on, Tony. Apparently, the Silk and Spider-Man had a little fling.
Yeah, well, that's the... Because they're bitten by the same spider. And so throughout Spider-Man, they've had this pretty much want to fuck like bunnies type attitude when they're near each other. Oh. And when they're not, they both can somehow sense each other. All because of this the same spider and how it was. And the big thing with her in the whole Spider-Verse thing, just to give it away, she was the bride, as it was called. And there was the Scion, and then there was the other. These were three big things that tie in to the totems. I'm going to probably review the ending of the whole Spider-Verse, so I'll leave it be. But her, she was one of the special ones. She was one of the powerful ones, one of them that was going to be sacrificed. And, yeah, her and Parker, for the longest time, kept wanting to hook up and just had these... Their pheromones, I guess they were saying, were just so strongly attracted to each other. So I don't know if it's dampened now after the Spider-Verse or not, or if they're still like...
It'd be really cool, though, if they did, and then she bit his head off. I honestly didn't know much about this character. I like the fact that she has Silk come out of the ends of her fingers.
Well, I like, too, that her powers are a bit different, but she's not called Spider-Woman or Black Widow or Black Spider, like...
Well, because Spider-Woman and Black Widow already exist in the Marvel universe.
But I'm just saying, though, it's not like a something spider or something...
Arachnid chick.
Yeah. Silk sounds like a pretty cool... And I like how she webs up her costume, unless she's got a... she's got a more... She used to, when she called herself Silk, just made herself look like a silk, you know.
Yeah, kind of a mummy-ish looking thing. I like the fact that, like, you know... She's getting ready for work, and she literally wove clothing out of her own silk out of the end of her fingers. I'm like, that's fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just a lot of good stuff. Excuse me, going on in here. You know, I'm not going to get into the actual story and what's going on too much, just because I do really want people to read this. But her inner monologue is fantastic. You know, she's trying to be Spider-Man, but trying to be herself. And like, so, and she tends to talk a lot too during the, during the little fights that she gets in. And one of her inner monologue boxes says, okay, I seriously need to work on my quips. Is there a handbook for that? and it's just, it's overall, I don't know what it is about this character. I think she's one of the most real characters that I've seen in a superhero story in a while. She's vulnerable, but she's strong. And I think those two things make it one of those characters where you really find some attachment to her. And I think Robbie Thompson did a wonderful job in that. You know, he kind of figured out a way on how to make you care about this person and want to see her succeed, and you're rooting for her the whole time. And she is a bit of an underdog because she's just starting out. It's not like Superman or you know, Wolverine or whoever else, that they're strong. They know what they're doing. They got their shit together. You know, well, maybe not Wolverine because he's a little adamantium statue right now. But you know, still, Peter Parker, I don't necessarily find myself rooting for him anymore because he's done it.
Yeah. That's, you know, why I like Superior more, because it was new.
Yeah. And I think, well, and Tony, I think maybe for that reason, you might really like, you might really like this, but, you know, this is just some beautiful, beautiful work. And I think one of the other things, too, Tony, I don't know if you noticed, but, like, on the flashback, there's some flashback scenes in here with her family from when she was, you know, before she went into the bunker. They're muted. They've got, like, a soft filter on them compared to current time, which is much more crisp and clean.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, just, God, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous book to look at and super fun to read. I've already read it twice just because I'm like, this is fun.
Are you happy that you know who this character is, unlike Thor?
Fuck off. yeah, no, this is a great book. And I think one of the best superhero books that I've read in years. And I'll tell you, I mean, hands down, this is the most excited I've been about a big two book in longer than I can remember. So, highly recommend picking this one up. I can't say enough about it. So there, that's it.
All right. Well, that was, Off the Shelf, brought to you by MotorCityComicCon.com.
Yeah. All right.
Now to some news. Something that,
wait,
what
should we hold off on the announcement? Because the contest is kind of newsworthy. Should we hold that till the very end?
Yeah, we can hold that to the end.
All right. Keep listening.
All right. Okay. Something that I'd found out and noticed kind of when I went to my comic book shop this week, seeing if you did. Did you pick up anything from IDW? Or did you see anything from IDW?
No.
Because there wasn't anything. They there's some ongoing problems with their West Coast ports over there, California area and all that, that the dock workers and everything are going on strike. They couldn't get any of their books out this week.
No shit.
Yeah, there was randomly, when I was looking through the comic list, they had a press release. I didn't see much more news about it, but maybe because it wasn't as widely known, or that just comic book stores were like, okay, it was the delayed shipment, but it's kind of interesting to think that a whole publisher's works for a week couldn't get out due to whatever's going on with that. So it was a little interesting tidbit that I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they can get out next week and it'll be double the stuff to get.
Well, you know what they could do to fix that is they could get a DeLorean with a flux capacitor and go back in time and fix that. Because apparently Universal Pictures said that the future is coming.
In movie form?
Well, I'm assuming because it's Universal Pictures.
Yeah, but they could be the, since it started off there, sending it to then. Yeah, I guess that would make
more sense. Well, it was Universal Pictures itself that teased the little release, and you see the car with the flames.
Maybe it's not a movie. Maybe they're finally debuting the fucking hoverboard.
Oh, that would be... well, okay, 2015... am I correct, Tony, that 2015 is the year that they went to...
Yep, it is their future year.
Yeah. Okay, so...
The only thing I do know that is actually coming out this year is the laceless Nike shoes.
Are those actually coming out?
Yep, they... back... 2008, they actually created some that looked like it, but they weren't power laces is what they were called in the movie.
Yeah.
Because just the technology was there. They have now developed, and the shoes are going to probably go for a fortune, but some sort of like mechanical device that you can put your foot in, step down on your heel, and they will then, or push a button, and it will just, like,
zzz, zzz. It'd be cool if it was just, like, a little trigger on your toe.
Yeah,
like
something that you could just do with your feet, but...
And you just tried it in your shoe when I said that, didn't you? I want to know how many listeners at home did the same thing.
Flick their toe.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
So I know for sure that's coming out, and if that's what they're talking, I don't know, but I would love to see some more of that.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. Now, here's the thing. If perhaps your time machine isn't a DeLorean and it's a motorcycle, there's something else cool that is coming out in July. I'm not even a fan of this game because I'm not an Xbox guy, but even I think this is sweet. There's a new fucking motorcycle helmet coming out from NECA. I don't know what that is. That looks like the Master Chief helmet from Halo. That's fucking cool. Like, if I had a motorcycle and I was a gamer, you're damn right I'd be wearing this helmet. I don't know how much it's going to cost, but that is just fucking cool. Did you see the picture of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's very, very cool. I saw it on comicbook.com, so if anybody else wants to go check it out, you guys are more than welcome to go over there. Tony, did you see the Jim Starlin news?
Yes, that one of his creations is getting a TV deal? Or?
Yeah, TV deal for Dreadstar. I knew you'd be excited about that one because I know how much you love Starlin. But I guess Variety reported that Starlin got a deal with Universal Cable Productions. So I don't know where it's going to be coming out on. But, it's kind of the whole space opera.
Yeah, that's the thing, though. I don't really know about Dreadstar all that much, so...
Really?
Yeah.
I know how much you love Starlin. I figured you'd read, like, pretty much all of his shit.
Well, he's done a lot for DC, too, that I didn't really read a lot that I've wanted to get into with the New Gods and everything, so... You know, I definitely will get into this character and find out a little bit more about him because, you know, it's something.
Yeah.
Something cool.
Got a couple little, well, at least one tidbit of, oh, no, actually, I take it back. There's a few tidbits of movie, tidbits. What the fuck am I? Tidbits of movie news. Marina Baccarin has been cast as the female lead in Deadpool. And now I'm really interested to go check out Deadpool because, yeah, I kind of love her.
Well, there was a cool thing that I had saw recently within the last 2 weeks, which I wanted to bring up. I saw it last week, and so since I wasn't here, I didn't. Before they announced her, a casting, like, sheet, you know, how they have those things and they have the production name hidden with different names of characters, but they're all pseudo nicknames or whatever for them, like mm-hmm. Richard and John and whatever, but you read the descriptions of them and you're kind of like, old grizzly one-eyed man, well, that's got to be Cable or something. Not that it was that specific, but when
Patch.
It's
Wolverine is Patch,
but it was cool trying to the internet trying to decipher who some of these people are, and the big telling of it was also for some of these characters they have to sign a 3-movie deal. So Fox is already planning on Deadpool being a...
Well, that's not that uncommon nowadays because if the movie does well,
yeah,
they'll get a treatment for a second film. But they want to make sure that they're available if it does well. That's really not that unheard of out there. But more movie news. There was a new international trailer released for Mad Max Fury Road. Fucking A, man. This is going to be so good. Are you a fan, Tone, of the...
The originals? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when I say the originals, a lot of people just think of...
Thunderdome?
No, The Road Warrior and Thunderdome. A lot of people don't even think about the actual Mad Max film.
Yeah.
So, like...
And that's what this seems more little... going back to its roots.
This one is more of the Road Warrior,
mm-hmm.
you know, to me. But I'm fucking loving it. I am just, I am so excited about this because it looks gorgeous. It really, really does look gorgeous. So,
did you see the picture of Aquaman?
Yeah.
Jason Momoa?
Yeah.
Just not seeing it. It doesn't look like Aquaman.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know. There's just something about him that just... He looks badass. He looks cool, but...
Are you just pissed because he's not blonde?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think that really matters.
You're a racist. You want blonde Aquaman.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it looks cool, but... And that does just because I'm talking about hair color doesn't make me a racist.
You're a hairist.
Yes. I'm going to start judging people by their hair now.
Yeah, well. Hey, we still have the majority of ours.
Yeah.
The reason we got beards. Because our hair went south. So, more movie news. And, Tony, I know this one is going to make you pee a little bit. But Neil Blomkamp is officially making a new Alien movie.
Yes. Both of those together, just amazing. He actually just seeing Neil made one of my favorite movies, District 9. He's an amazing, you know, artistically how he does things. Since then, he made Elysium, which people didn't really like, but I thought it was all right. I think he will do an amazing job on an Alien movie, and that it's an Alien movie coming out. That's one of those franchises that when I was a kid, and my dad probably shouldn't have let us watch these movies, but did, and I thought, holy fucking, this is sweet, until I kind of started getting nightmares later on in the night, because I was like maybe 8, I don't remember, but
yeah,
still, awesome franchise.
Okay, this is just going to be a little bit of a riff, because we haven't caught up in a while, but what's your favorite Alien movie?
Oh, Aliens, number 2. I don't think there's a single person that doesn't think number 2 is the greatest of all of them. Because there is multiple aliens that showed more of a hierarchy of how they were. There was a lot more guns and fire and fighting. The first one was more of a horror, but there was only 8 alien there. Same with the third one. And that was all the movies they made of aliens. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah.
You're thinking, like, wasn't there a fourth?
it's kind of like the movie that wasn't made for Marvel. Yeah. Well, actually, it was technically Fox, so. But, all right, let's see.
Well, I guess if we're going to be talking on, like, casting and thoughts, me and I talked about it before, is that it was to be picked up, the Lucifer series by Mike Carey, which came on the pages of Sandman by Neil Gaiman. Fox has officially ordered a pilot for it. So I'm so happy because this is one of those franchises that it honestly, after reading it, made me reconsider some things in religion and worldview thoughts, all while following this bad guy who isn't such a bad guy. His name's Lucifer, and he was just running hell and just wanted to give up hell and move to L.A. and open a bar and just kind of live his life out there. What's going to piss me off is that this show follows that, except for he moves to L.A. where he helps the LAPD take down criminals. No, that is not what the comic book was about. And he was not about helping criminals. He was about helping himself. And so I hope that that's just to throw people off. I don't know. So they got that going for them, which is nice.
That is nice. That's nice. Couple comic book things here that we need to announce. We talked a while back about Boom Studios bringing out a new Bill and Ted comic book, and I was super excited because I didn't realize that our good buddy Jerry Gaylord from Fanboys vs. Zombies is going to be doing the art on this. That's a fucking gorgeous choice for this book because of, you know, the, I think the attitude of Bill and Ted and the funness of all of it. And I think Jerry's going to be able to bring these two characters to life in a way that nobody else probably will. So I was excited to see that on there. So congrats, Jerry, on this, you know, and I will be picking these up. And it's coming out here next month, March.
Awesome.
So, yeah, we might have to get in touch with Jerry and get him on the show to kind of talk a little bit about this on there. So
that'd be excellent.
Yeah. What was it? Was it be excellent to each other?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. One other comic book thing is that Oni Press actually did officially announce, when I first saw the news, it was just a teaser, but it's official. There's an Invader Zim comic coming out. And while I never really got into the cartoon, I have friends that, like, they are just go fucking nuts over this comic.
Yeah, Matt's wife actually really loved it. So maybe this will get her to pick up some comics.
Yeah, possible. So, but yeah, so I mean, that it's going to be coming out on July 1st. And that, I guess it's, I don't know if they actually said who the creative team is on it. But anyway, there you go, guys. It's, you're getting your Invader Zim. I've got actually one of my really good buddies that, he's not a comic guy at all, but he loves this show, and he lives out in Colorado now, and I'm gonna have to share this with him and let him know that that's gonna happen, and he's gonna squee. So, all right,
Tony, my buddy Liefeld.
Yeah, yeah, your favorite creator.
Yes,
and actually, you know, whether you whatever your true feelings are, you can't actually complain too much because he helped create Deadpool.
Yes, he did, by totally taking Deathstroke.
Yeah, well, that... No, Deadpool came before Deathstroke.
No.
Wait, though. Did he do Deathstroke over at DC, too?
I don't know if... I don't think he did over there, but Wade Wilson.
Yeah, I know, but... Okay, but...
You do the Deathstroke in a Deadpool?
Yeah.
Like... Yeah, you know all that. That was all. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I don't know how much created or just liberties he took of copying someone. I guess I will thank the man because the way Deadpool is now actually was nothing because of him, because Deadpool is a way different character now than he was then.
Yeah.
But pouches galore.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
and he still has those.
Rob Liefeld is coming back to Image in July with Bloodstrike and Brigade later.
Yeah, that cover of Bloodstrike, man, it reminds me of a comic book that I picked up at one point, Cable and Deadpool. I mean,
is that a real cover that's coming out?
That is a real cover. I showed you the straight copy.
It is
100% straight copy with a couple extra pouches on Deadpool.
Oh my god, like, I don't know how that's legal. Anyway, I have to do some investigative reporting before I can report.
I think we're going to throw this picture up on the website just for people to...
I think we need to verify that that's legit first, but yes. All right. So anyway, he's coming back. I have two other things that I wanted to bring up. One, it is... This is one of the most beautiful things ever. And even though, you know, we've never talked to Mike Mignola and, you know, we've never even tried to communicate, I'm pretty sure at this point now that we're influencing the world in ways that we didn't realize because Hellboy is getting his own beer from Rogue Ales. And it's perfect, man. It's the right hand of Doom Red Ale.
That is perfect for that. That's a perfect fit.
Yeah. And basically what it says, the description of this is this is a red ale brewed with all the same passion and intensity that Mike Mignola and Dark Horse have brought to the creation of Hellboy for the last 21 years. You might not enjoy it more than the next issue, but you'll certainly enjoy your favorite characters' stories with one of these in your right hand. So, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's cool because you've actually got Hellboy with like a little drawing of Hellboy on the label. I'm excited. It's going to be fun. I'm going to have to buy one of these. And this is one of those things that I will wait in line to have Mike Mignola sign, because I think that's going to be the most like that's something that would be fantastic. And what's CGC going to do about it? Nothing.
They may get into covering beer. I mean, they just do comic books right now.
Oh, yeah, just comic books and cards and posters. Concert posters.
Concert posters?
Yeah, because they started doing concert posters.
Why?
Okay, here's the one thing. I am okay with them doing, like, any kind of grading for coins and posters and single sheets of paper and, like, sports cards, because there's a front and a back and you put it in a case and that's all you need to fucking see. A comic book should never be slabbed, you fuckwads, because the beauty of a comic book is what's inside. It has nothing to do with the cover art. Well, I mean, it's partly to do with the cover art, but that's not the only thing. So I get really angry about slabbing comic books. It's kind of like, you know, I'm going to have a puppy and I'm never going to let it out of its pen. You know, it's about the same way.
I know. We should let our comic books be free.
It's like holding in a fart. That's not any fun either.
I don't know how you compare those two, but okay.
All right. Well, yeah, but you, well, anyway. All right. That's everything I had this week, Tony. Did you have anything else we needed to talk about?
Yes. We need to talk about a contest winner.
Okay. All right. We have, let me double check here. We had 191 entries.
Damn.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't count because the people that got the final question right. No, wait, I'm sorry. That does count. Because actually it was like 140-some or something like that.
Individual people.
140, okay. 40-some. But then some people had multiple entries over multiple weeks. And we had on there also, like, you got two entries if you got the final question correct.
I'm glad you were doing the math because...
Yeah. Should we recap at all, kind of, our questions? For anybody that's interested? I don't even remember.
Did you write them down?
Well, I didn't write them down per se.
But... I mean, I know the answers to them.
Okay, so our first question was...
Part of Hellfire Club.
Yeah, somebody was revealed as a member of the Hellfire Club in some X-Men issue, and the answer to that was Tony Stark. The next question was the creator of the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
But we didn't even say Ninja Turtles. Like
we said mutant, yeah, creatures or something. Yeah. Same ooze that has been supposedly made Daredevil or something.
Yep, and that was Kevin Eastman. The next question then was... The guy that was like the living nuclear weapon or whatever from Batman Beyond, his real name, that was Derek Powers. And then the last one was about the guy who's dated a drug addict, murdered girlfriend and a schizophrenic, and that was Matt Murdock. So the answers were Tony Stark, Kevin Eastman, Derek Powers, Matt Murdock. What do those four answers have in common? You have Derek, Kevin, Matt, and Tony, the four of us that created Drunk on Comics. So there it is. Tony, random number generator.
All right. I will put this in since my phone is on silent, I'll make sound effects. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, 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 boop. And give me a second to put in the other number. Boop, 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 boop. All right, and the number is 10. Who's number 10 on your list of people?
10? Hold on. I'm getting there. Because I'm slow. Number 10 is Linz Shearer. So, all right, Linz. Congrats. You won yourself 2 flasks from inkwhiskey.com. And we will be in touch with you to let you know how to collect them and where we should send them to and et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Well, since we just did this right now, let's flip it around a bit. Let's just do Booze in a Book, brought to you by Ink Whiskey. Thank you guys for allowing us to have your flasks to give away and have fun with our listeners.
I drank out of mine so much last night. Dude, I was... Well, you saw me at the bar. I actually, like, I had... I may or may not have taken a full flask to the bar. And I may or may not have had to refill it at the bar. So, anyway. All right.
Booze in the Book this week.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What do you have?
I will explain the booze first. It is called a hand grenade. It is a New Orleans most powerful drink. Holy fuck, is this the most powerful drink? Quick backstory to this. When I was a freshman in college, my HTM teacher, and it's got a little grenade ringing around in there, and it's shaped like a nozzle type thing with the grenade at the bottom.
What is the grenade in here?
Just something that they just put in there for, I don't know, souvenir. Little hand grenade you could throw at people when you're drunk.
Oh. See, I thought what would have been cool is if it was one of those things that was
ice.
Like, yeah, that was like the little chiller thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, my freshman year, my HTM teacher was telling us about his trip to New Orleans and where he got this drink that knocked him on his ass called a hand grenade. So, I was hoping to God I'd be able to find this legendary bar. Well, they actually sell them at a couple different ones because it's such a famous drink down there. I got instantly drunk. And you can see that it doesn't hold a whole lot of liquor compared to other huge, you know, drinking things. I should show you the 64-ounce fishbowl that I got, which is a fishbowl-shaped thing. That was good. This is amazing. This in itself is a reason why you want to go down there. We need to be careful because you have 2 of them and you might wake up in the streets in a coma because it was so powerful.
I don't think you wake up in a coma.
You could be surprised with this drink. So with that, I needed I just wanted to talk about this drink mainly. I needed to find a comic book that I could read that would be just as powerful. Unfortunately, this week, I didn't find one, so I had to go back last week since I just picked up all my books from that week, too. Thanos versus Hulk. Because you have some powerful bad guys in here. Plus, this drink is green like the Hulk, so matches up quite well.
And Thanos' pee is green.
You've been looking?
Oh, yeah.
So
it's only because we shower together, and he's one of those gross guys.
I ultimately would say this can go good with anything because you like the book. It's powerful. However, you might want to read the book while not drinking this because you may fall asleep from an alcoholic thing.
All right.
So good. So, so good.
All right. So, cool. Indy Turnpike this week is 8.
As 8 years old? Number. Is 8 times 2?
Nope.
24?
8 number That's 1.
That doesn't work. What?
8 number 1.
I was just mumbling to myself. 8.
From Dark Horse Comics.
Wait, what happened to 7?
Well, no, it's what happened to 9, because
oh, yeah.
7, 8, 9.
I can't even do that joke
right. All right, so the story is by Raphael Albuquerque and Mike Johnson. Now, Mike Johnson did the script. Art and colors by Raphael Albuquerque. Letters by Nate Picos. And Tony, you remember a couple weeks ago we were talking about The Dying and the Dead?
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about how cool the colors were in that. This is another one of those books that really has, excuse me, kind of that same very limited color palette.
Yep.
On it, where they're very, very distinct with what they do. There's only a couple different colors in, you know, like, basically you'll have, like, a blue, a yellow, and a red, or, like, you know, a blue, a green. And the first thing that caught me is when you open it up, the inside of the front color says, the past is green, The present is purple. The future is blue. The meld is something entire, something else entirely, and that's in yellow on there. So they're kind of fucking with me a little bit, because as you're going through, you're like, okay, these are the colors. It's telling you what the times are, but the times don't make sense because your main character in here, Joshua, is actually traveling in time. He's going back in time to try and kill this Nazi fucker, and he winds up on a planet that has little dinosaurs and people all at the same time.
Okay. That's the Elsewhere thing?
That's probably the meld.
There, yeah.
Yeah. That's as much as I'm going to tell you about this story. Partially because it's really cool, it's really fun. Partially because I'm loving it, but I'm really confused. But that's the way a book like this should be when you're talking about time travel and they're jumping back and forth in different times to kind of show you where you're currently at. This is beautiful storytelling. The artwork is fantastic on this. The colors will blow you away. And you're going to find yourself running back and forth to that front page going, wait, what? Wait, what? Wait, which color does this? What's that color? It's nuts. But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. Having a lot of fun. Cool to see a book like this come out of Dark Horse. You know, just all around kick ass. I think, Tony, you would like this one a lot because I know you like your time travel stuff.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any like showing where there could be repercussions when he's in the past that when he goes to the future?
I
haven't shown that. Okay, no. I mean, I'm sure there's got to be something.
Like... Here's one of the cool things though, because like he actually has a communicating device where he can, like, when he travels through time, they have a way to communicate with the time that he left from.
Mm.
And it's like, but you got to be on frequency 8. You know, you got to be on channel 8. That's the way to, and it's I don't know. It's one of, like, that was the first book I read out of my stack this week, and it's the one that I kept going back to. That and Silk were just blew me away. So, all right, that's it for Indie Turnpike.
Do you have anything else for Last Call?
Yeah, I had a couple actually that I wanted to bring up, and a lot of these are books that I've talked about before, but they're still really, really fun. Dawn of Vampirella, you know, Joseph Michael Linster, that dude can draw a woman like nobody else can. The Burning Fields, number 2 from Boom. Manifest Destiny from Image, this is now issue 13. Plunder, issue 1 of 4 from Arkea. This is not going to be a book for everyone.
It's about pirates?
Yes.
Okay.
Those
are the only people I ever hear say plunder.
Yeah. But it's not going to be a book for everybody, but it's a very, very good story. But I might get into it later on down the road. Ivar Time Walker, number 2. I talked about number 1 here a while back. And then Sparks Nevada, Marshall on Mars, number 1, The Thrilling Adventure Hour.
I almost picked that up, but it just seemed a little weird.
Okay, so I randomly picked this one up because I'm like, okay, it's Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. And I love the Acker and Blacker combo. That I've enjoyed what they did. I did not know The Thrilling Adventure Hour is actually a podcast.
Oh.
And they kind of did it in the realm of like the 1930s and 40s radio shows.
Okay.
And apparently it's like 200-ish episodes in. And Sparks Nevada is one of these serials that they have on there. Apparently, like, they've got some people that are, like, fairly well-known, but they're friends, like, in the acting world. They just come, they sit, and they do the show, and, like, I guess Nathan Fillion is on there on occasion.
What?
Yeah. And so, this is, I don't know if, because I don't know the podcast, I don't know if this is just picking up another portion, if this is retelling. I think it's all brand new. But the nice thing with those serials, and it's kind of the same thing with the serials that they would show before movies back in the 50s and 60s as well, you didn't have to know. Yeah, it was another reason to go back and see the movies every week, no matter what was playing, but it's just going to be fun. So
that, I want a comic book made after our podcast.
But
a bunch of guys just boozing and going to the comic shop.
I would actually much rather that somebody make a beer called Drunk on Comics first, and then a comic. Right. And then we don't have to ever think about what we're going to pair for boozing a book ever again. Read our comic and drink our beer. That's boozing a book this week. Always.
I picked up the Autumn Lands Tooth and Claw number 4. It's still good. Loki, Agent of Asgard. I'm sad that after it's coming to an end, once the whole battle world shit happens. And Fables 149, they're ending at 150. And
are you going to cry in your pants?
Yeah. In my pants. I'm going to cry. Maybe I should listen to you before I say yes.
I love throwing shit like that at you. All right. Anything else?
No, that's about it.
All right, well, congratulations to Linz for winning your 2 flasks. And I guess that does it for us for this week.
All right.
All right. Keep reading your comics. We'll be back next week to talk to you more about them then. Might even be in Oregon.